This is episode 322 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, March 7th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a kiss. The future is here.
Now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Despite the speculation of Steve Jobs' health, last week we saw the somewhat gaunt Apple CEO launch his latest pride and joy, the iGadget known as iPad 2, a slimmer, faster, more colourful version of the device which has already sold 15 million units worldwide in just 9 short months. And as Steve does so well, he left his San Franciscan audience wanting. All credit must go to the Apple marketing machine with the rollout of their iconic television campaign promoting a range of must-have accessories for the new device. Steve was at pains to point out the price of the new iPad, a price which remains unchanged from the original iPad price. But in the same sentence, he was quick to point out that the nearest competitor's pricing was higher than 5 of the 6 Apple iPad models. Combine the iPad 2 with the ubiquitous iPhone, which has now sold over 100 million units, with the biggest app store on the internet, and you have the recipe for success. In fact, it's a recipe which others in the same marketplace can only dream of emulating. In the same presentation, Steve was also selling up the grandeur of Apple's online stores. iTunes, apps and iBooks now boast 200 million accounts, with a credit card on file, and with one-click purchasing, something which Apple is very proud of, and something that Apple believes is the most accounts with credit cards anywhere on the internet, even greater than that of Amazon. There has been speculation of recent times over the next generation of iPhone having near-field communications technology built in. This would enable iPhone users to purchase goods and services at retail point of sale, like the current PayPass technology. But instead of debiting your bank account, it may just debit your Apple account, turning the Cupertino giant into a bank. I wonder if Apple will be good for a home loan in a year or so's time.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner checks out the next incarnation of Apple's iPad. Josh Rubens, director of cloud brokerage firm Cloud Solutions, joins us live in the studio to discuss the pros and cons of today's cloud computing options. Nintendo confirms that Mario and Luigi will go 3D at E3, and Apple drops the price of iPad 1. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. But first up, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple launches the iPad 2. News Corporation buys UK satellite network BSkyB. An ATM glitch leaves the Commonwealth Bank red-faced. WikiLeaks will be coming to a movie theatre near you. And actor Charlie Sheen creates social networking history. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Apple faithful need wait no longer. CEO Steve Jobs last week revealed the much-hyped iPad 2, due for release in the United States on the 11th of March. The tablet computer features a new 1.08 GHz dual-core A5 CPU, an even thinner case, cameras mounted front and back, and even HDMI video output. The new iPad 2 runs the updated iOS 4.3 operating system. Apple said last week the iPad 2 will be available in Australia from the 25th of March. Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has been given the go-ahead by British authorities to acquire Europe's leading satellite pay TV service, BSkyB. The network also owns pay TV channels including Sky Atlantic, Sky Sports and Sky Movies. Already the third largest media conglomerate in the world, News Corp will also acquire Sky News as part of the deal. This has caused considerable consternation in the UK because Murdoch already owns the four biggest selling newspapers in Britain. The concern is that the Murdoch juggernaut will have too much influence over news reporting in the UK, because Sky News is the only commercial pay TV news channel. Secretary of State for Culture, the Right Honourable Jeremy Hunt, MP, assured the House of Commons last week that the acquisition did not need to be referred to the Competition Commission.
Throughout this process, I have been very aware of the potential controversy surrounding this merger. Nothing is more precious to me than the free and independent press, for which this country is famous the world over. In order to reassure the public, I have sought and published independent advice. After careful consideration, I have followed that independent advice.
But an opposition spokesman described David Cameron's government as arrogant and said it was being cavalier about its responsibility to be impartial. An alliance, which includes the Daily Mirror publisher Trinity Mirror, as well as BT, Guardian Media Group, Associated Newspapers, Northcliffe Media and Telegraph Media Group, said the decision was a whitewash and that they would be calling for a judicial review of the decision. The Commonwealth Bank was left red-faced on Tuesday last week after a computer glitch that let customers using the bank's ATMs to overdraw their accounts. Word spread quickly via social media, and people queued up in the hundreds to withdraw thousands of dollars cash that wasn't in their accounts. The Commonwealth Bank said that they still didn't know how much cash had been incorrectly withdrawn, but some customers were believed to have withdrawn thousands of dollars. Commonwealth Bank spokesman Mr. Brian Fitzgerald said that the problem occurred with an overnight maintenance routine and that the ATMs defaulted to a standby mode and didn't check account balances prior to dispensing cash.
Unfortunately, there was a small number who identified that their systems were offline and have purposely set out to overdraw their account, and that has resulted in some customers accessing more funds than what they had in their account.
Mr. Fitzgerald said that there was no such thing as free money and that those who had intentionally overdrawn their accounts would be pursued.
Yes, we have a record of every transaction that's been made today, and we will be following up our customers to make sure that we recover the funds that they've overdrawn.
Just 4 weeks ago, the Commonwealth Bank reported a net profit of $3.052 billion for the six-month period to the 31st of December 2010, which is up 5% on $2.9 billion in the previous corresponding period. The movie rights to the ongoing Julian Assange saga, that is WikiLeaks, have been sold to Steven Spielberg. A book has been published by The Guardian, which begins with the WikiLeaks publication of tens of thousands of classified US documents relating to the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Steven Spielberg has purchased the movie rights to this book. Associated Press last week reported that the movie will likely be made by DreamWorks, but no time frame for its production has been released. And star of the hit television sitcom Two and a Half Men, Charlie Sheen, created social networking history last week when his new Twitter account attracted more than 1 million followers in just over 24 hours. The celebrity bad boy had a record number of followers after tweeting for the first time on the 2nd of March and after his account had been verified as genuine by Twitter. Sheen has been immersed in controversy in recent months after a series of bizarre television interviews, allegations of drug abuse, alcohol-fueled parties with escorts, and the recent loss of custody of his two young sons. Sheen said he was riding the tsunami of media on a Mercury surfboard. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody.
I live in the town of White Salmon.
STFU.
That's the one?
Yes.
Yes. This would be like suing Telstra because he didn't like what somebody said on the phone.
I don't know why, but that's what they basically said.
Who said that?
Optus.
Embrace the technology like the music industry.
My idea of church was the swap meets on a Sunday.
Oh, Andrew.
Yeah, I think he's missed the point entirely.
Australia's television networks deliberately run shows late to stop us changing the channel.
Inquiries do a lot less damage than evil legislation like that.
Budget, dear. Budget. I can't figure out why whatever I want.
Lena's making filtering noises.
She is.
That's what a filter sounds like.
It does.
Stop locking things down and making it hard for the people who want to watch your content.
Is that a place too while we're on travel shows?
Smoked?
No.
Where?
Yes.
What?
Exactly.
Okay. And he talks to his imaginary friend and your sins go away.
With his magic wand.
And Lena just alienates 4.5 billion Roman Catholics.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody around Australia, wherever you might be listening to us. This is Tech Talk Radio. Group of individuals come in here, and we do this every other Monday night, don't we, Dr. Ron?
Yes, yes, we're all individuals.
We are. And that was the voice of said Dr. Ron, and we must have started. How are you?
I'm going well. How are you this week?
Oh, you know, it's early days yet, but we're off to a swinging start, I think, this week, as opposed to
in previous times.
It's busy in the studio here tonight.
It is.
There's lots going on.
It's very hectic. He's hoping all the right buttons get pushed in the right order this evening. But anyway, who's the guy next to you? And I don't mean the Graham, who comes in every other week. Hi, Graham, by the way.
You'd be talking about special guest Justin Dunlop.
Special guest?
Who has his own microphone and everything.
For his annual appearance.
Yes. Thank you very much.
JD, how are you?
Pleasure to be here.
You know the iPhone 4's come out since you were here last?
I knew that, and I've got a Nano, and I'll put it on the...
Oh, wow, look at that. In a wristwatch.
In a wristwatch.
Cool.
You are serious.
I am absolutely serious.
Oh,
If it's like a magnetic wristband or something.
It's got a slap-on wristband.
It's broken, it's turned off.
Yeah, that's right. we'll talk about that later if people want to know how they work.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm going to twitpick this while everyone's still being introduced.
Are you? Okay, Lena, hi everyone.
Hi.
Oh, hang on, I've got to push this button. Try it again.
Hello.
Just not working for me at the moment. Let's try that.
Hi.
There you are. Yes, hi there.
After all that.
After all that.
Hi.
You're in my right ear. Anyway, JD. JD, what's happened in the last 2 years since you've been here?
An awful lot of things have happened in Appleland, and I'm sure you've spoken about them.
Woo-hoo.
So we're going to talk about the most recent thing later.
Yeah.
But we've got...
Have you got an air yet?
No.
Do you want to get that in?
They are very nice.
Really?
Mm. Full-size keyboard. Very, very sexy.
Yeah. Mm. How's the battery life?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Because they've got a solid-state drive in them, so their battery's pretty good.
Oh, SSD. So boots quick.
Mm.
Yeah. Have you seen the line yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah?
Raw.
Some interesting things in the line, but once again, it's all purely speculation. What you read on the Mac rumor websites and things like that.
So. That's right.
Yeah. Have you bought any new toys? Because I haven't seen you since before Christmas.
Well, this is the new toy.
We haven't seen you since the OB.
Yeah.
That's true.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
It was.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, the Nano's the new toy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no, just been plodding along.
Oh, excellent. Well, welcome back anyway. Mark Diggins popped in the other day, another long-lost Tech Talk Radio
soul.
Yes. He's finished building 4G in America to a point where he knows how to do it now, so he's come back to do it here. Yes. Anyway, Graham, how are you travelling this week?
I'm going very well this week. I've got my new laptop.
Have you?
Mm.
What's new about it? This is ThinkPad. I thought you always had a ThinkPad.
Yeah, this is a new ThinkPad.
What's new about it?
Well, I just got it.
What's new? Has it got retinal scan? Is it Tronish?
It's got a camera front and back. It's a little bit thinner and it's slightly faster.
Shut up, Dr. Ron. It's not. It has got a camera. It's got a which my one didn't, built in at the top here. It's got built-in Wi-Fi, which you expect. Built-in Bluetooth, which you'd expect. Built-in mobile broadband, which is new for me, and there's a big saga about that if you want to hear about Telstra and Big Pond and how stupid some big organisations can be.
I've got a grudge against them.
Have you?
Well, actually...
I very nearly did, but they saved the day at the last minute.
Not lucky to have a grudge,
so I don't have to plug anything in. I can be on Next G mobile broadband.
Yep.
And little SIM plugs in underneath the battery.
Did you know?
Really cool.
Did you know that dongles are on the way out now? Everyone's tethering, and everyone's got a device like you have where you stick something in it and you connect
to it. Yeah, the SIM just plugs straight into the laptop.
Yeah.
Great.
And the rumour is that the iPhone 5, in fact, will have the SIM embedded in the board, so you won't have a SIM card. You get
That's no good.
You won't be able to take the SIM out and swap the
SIM. Exactly. What happens if you want to move your service, like from one device? You can't obviously do that, can you?
Well, I think you can program it on the air. I think that's the idea.
What about the RFID stuff that they're talking about for the new iPhone 5?
Mm.
So you can do your shopping.
Mm.
You can charge it. As I said in the opening of the show, Apple's going to be a bank.
Don't need a barcode anymore.
No, they'll be good for a home loan very shortly. Anyway, this is Tech Talk Radio. We've got lots and lots to talk about tonight. We're going to learn about cloud computing, amongst other things. We're going to talk about Charlie Sheen's latest habits and the ones we can talk about.
There's more interesting things to talk about than him, I think.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a PayPal dev challenge, which is very interesting for the droid market and stuff like that. So, we've got some film news coming in this evening, too, if you're a fan of Lucasfilm's the Star Wars things.
The panelists are playing Pong.
I've just muted my speakers. If everybody else mutes theirs, that won't happen. What was happening was, we'd all switched away from the chat, and someone said something in the chat, and all the laptops around the room went bing.
Bing. My chat just got awfully big. Hello, chat people. Should we talk about the chat? The chat is a place where you can come and chat to us. That's by name, by nature, isn't it?
And that's if it's 8 o'clock in Eastern Australia on a Monday night when you're listening to us, of course. If you're listening somewhere else, then the best place for you is the forum.
It is, indeed.
So chat.techtalkradio.com.au. If you're listening to us right now at 8 p.m. on a Monday night, live on the stream or on 3WBC in Melbourne, And if you're listening on another station around the country or listening on the podcast or whatever, the place for you is forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Yeah, so if you're a cabbie and you're up in Katherine and you're drinking a stiff coffee at about 2 or 3 in the morning,
wonder if there's
jump online and see if there's anyone there.
Is there an internet cafe in Katherine where they can go and hit the forum?
Oh, I'm sure there would be.
Hmm.
Yeah, anyway.
Or maybe they can bring it up on their iPads or something.
Now, I'm going to start off the ball rolling this evening. I just want some input. I'm going to ask a question. If anyone can answer this, I would be really appreciative. Why has Telstra gone to 60-second increment billing on their mobile service?
And their home phones.
And the home phones.
On the home phones, and too.
Absolutely, yep.
We got the letter in the mail.
What is this all about? Why?
Revenue raising?
So they... Yeah. Yeah.
Says Dr. Ron, rubbing
but
his fingers together
no
at the weekend.
But no, there's no other reason apart from raising money. Is that right? What you're saying?
No, the only reason they'd make a change like that is if there's something in it for them. They're not going to do it if there's nothing in it for them.
I find that very annoying. Because if you talk for a minute and 1 second, you get charged for two.
2 minutes.
You used to get charged for a minute 90. But now, no, it's a minute two.
It's gone from 30 seconds to 60 seconds.
Yeah. So you make a phone call. Hi, honey, bring the milk. You know, that's going to cost you 40 cents for a flagpole, something which is obsolete and been around ever since some lady or gentleman in the PMG department used to put a 6.5 mil jack in a wall. That's flagpole for you. They kept that one going for a while, haven't they? And now we've got incremental charging. So just for a quick, you know, missed dial call, oh, I'm sorry, wrong number, that's going to cost you $1.50.
So if you get a wrong number, you might as well have a look at your watch and say,
let's have an argument.
Well, I've got you here.
Is this the right room for an argument?
tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah. Most of my calls are longer than that anyway, so...
Yeah, but the wrong... What, even to the wrong number?
Oh, well, I only call the right numbers, obviously. Yeah.
Do you have do you have any pocket problems? That's another thing. I was listening to another radio station, and a lot of people were complaining about being... If you have the first letter of your name starting with A, you're up the top of the dialing directory in people's phones.
Oh, it's pocket dialing.
Pocket dialing, yeah. Have you ever...
Pocket dialing is usually... It doesn't matter where you are in the phone book, because most pocket dials redial the last dialed number.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I used to do some work in a centre where people used to ring in regularly, and it was a big problem. And unfortunately, I have to single out the female mobile phone users.
Females, why?
Because they don't lock the phone and they drop it in their handbag.
Lena?
So handbag dials. Yeah, no, 90% of all the pocket dials we used to get were females. Handbag dials.
Is this the reason why, if you ever have need to ring 000 in Australia, which is our emergency services number, that you get the IVR that says, "Hi, if you're a real person, please press 5. Instead of getting handbag
calls?
That's
probably part of it.
That's the main reason why it was introduced, because they had so many calls from phones getting dropped in handbags, and they're also having so many calls from people from people dialing 0 for an outside line when they didn't need to.
On a mobile?
Especially from fax machines. And they were sending faxes internationally and they didn't have to dial 0.
And now,
because we
thought
of that.
That's the other 0011.
That's right. Yeah. We have 0011 here, which is our international access code. And the convention in Australia is 0 for an outside line. I know that'll sound very strange to our US brethren who all dial 9 for an outside line.
But then they dial 911, so they would get 9911.
Yeah, exactly. They probably
doesn't do anything, does it?
Well, that's right.
What service do you want?
And all persons try to do is dial 0 for an outside line, then 0011, and suddenly the poor operator at Telstra has fax machine tones in their ear.
So they got rid of it.
But putting that IVR in place, it cut down something like, it was 90-something percent of all calls to 000, just disappeared overnight.
Wow.
Yep.
Coke machines.
Yeah, Coke machines were another one. Yeah, absolutely. You're right,
Terry. What's a Coke machine?
Explain.
Well, the Coke machines that dial home to say I'm running out of Coke or whatever beverage they're serving.
Do they do that? They
used to ring 000.
Really?
Yeah, they'll misprogram with the 0, same sort of thing. They'd be trying to ring a call centre somewhere overseas to say, hey, I'm down to my last 50 cans of Diet Sprite. Yeah, and you're right, JD, same problem.
That's awful.
I can't believe that. I didn't know Coke machines phoned home.
Mm.
Now, you learn something every day on this show, don't you?
It was a massive percentage of calls that culled overnight.
Okay.
By putting that IVR there.
All right, well, thanks for answering that question. That's really handy. I'm pleased to know that they just want more from my back pocket. But anyway.
Correspondence, Andrew?
Oh, really? There goes the show. Off you go.
We need to entertain all of the feedback from our valued listeners.
Before you do that,
please.
Did you have any luck at the pokies, otherwise known as the ATM for the Commonwealth Bank the other day?
Oh, no. I popped that in the news, I think.
I know.
Yeah, that was quite funny.
My wife got there just moments after that all happened, and she couldn't get anything out of it, so I thought, you missed by the story of our life.
I shut them all down.
You wouldn't have.
You couldn't get money out of them.
You wouldn't have got anything anyway. The machine knew how much money it was giving out.
There's some fairly heavy-handed PR tactics going on radios. We know who you are. Give it back, please.
Yeah.
Appealing to people's honest side. Anyway, correspondence, Dr. Ron.
TARDIS 3 says, hi, Dr. Ron. Hi, TARDIS. I thought this article was interesting. I didn't even know that Google were experimenting with driverless cars.
Yes.
Makes two of us. Really?
Mm. This might be an idea for a Tech Talk discussion. We agree, TARDIS. I'll bet Dr. Graham wouldn't be a fan. TARDIS doesn't need to be a fan of driverless cars.
Yeah, well.
It'd go wherever the consensus took it.
On Google, you think, is that the...
Well, last year, Google engineers announced they'd been working on an ambitious project, cars that drive themselves. They were detailed in this New York Times story. If you have not read it, you should. There's a link there, which I'll put in the show notes, but good contributions, TARDIS.
I suspect that computers are not going to make ideal car drivers, but humans aren't ideal car drivers either, so the computer might not be any worse. The thing I suspect would be the case would be that computer-driven cars are going to work better in a world full of computer-driven cars, if you know what I mean. So
my
mixing
head
computer
exploded at that thought.
Yeah, it's like that,
mixing computer drivers and human drivers on the same roads might be a bad idea.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a certain compromise there because I don't know if you've what they had on Top Gear a while back, a car that parked itself.
Richard Hammond's
Lexus.
Yeah, and Richard Hammond couldn't program it, or one of them couldn't program
that's
it anyway.
Because you have to put in where the cars around you are. If you don't do that correctly,
but yeah, that
it ruins it.
That sort of thing, and sort of hazard avoidance might be a good move in cars. But yeah, I'm sure there's a compromise there. I'm sure it's good research anyway.
For the show, Dr. Ron?
Jeff Gates.
Hi, Jeff.
Long-time contributor.
All the way up there, the Great Lakes in Northern America.
Says Microsoft wants to shut it down, i.e. 6countdown.com.
Yeah, I tweeted that to you today for your organisation.
News for the show tonight, question mark.
Did you get that one too? Your organisation, everyone's organisation, get that IE6. We're going to close you down.
Countdown is on.
Yeah, good. Bring it on.
Use IE6.
Yeah, most people don't.
No.
2.2% of Australians or something now still have IE6 on there. Browser that's 10 plus years old. Sorry, off you go. Great.
And Ziao Chen Zin via Twitter says, thanks for choosing our app for App of the Week. Your
that
radio
was cool,
program is
it?
Really great.
Yeah, wherever he might happen to be.
So we had
the
developers of that App of the Week last week.
We got some good apps this week too. Stick around. Anyway, is that it?
Thanks, Zin. That's all our correspondence. Yes, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send correspondence if you have some.
Yes, and don't forget, if you want to join us live right now on the chat, you can do so, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Around the world, you're listening to Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
It had to happen, and it has happened. iPad 2 is here. I've got my iPad 1 just to prove that I still have a piece of Apple equipment here, but...
launched by Zombie Steve.
Yeah, he wasn't looking too flash, was he?
Yeah.
Did you see him? It was amazing. His pants stayed up.
Seen him look better.
Oh, he was very gaunt. He was very... Come on, Steve, you're a legend out there. He needs to hang in there.
That'll be why he's on medical leave, really.
Still. Yeah, did you hear his opening piece? He just couldn't resist popping in because he's been working long and hard against the new iPad 2. Anyway,
Apple are going to end up with a Weekend at Bernie's problem, aren't they, in the end? It's really going to be... One day, they're going to run out of Steve Jobs and... Yeah,
what
they're going to prop him up.
He's a robot.
Well, this is the problem.
Okay. I wonder if Steven Spielberg's bought the rights to this one.
Maybe.
Weekend at Bernie's. Weekend at Steve's.
That's it.
Oh, that's terrible.
The iCryo.
Oh, dear.
I see.
Anyway, let's talk about the iPad 2, which is now, I think it's available in the States. It becomes available here in Australia as of the 11th of March this year, which is probably the 12th by the time they get it here with the day delay and all that sort of stuff, whatever they do.
Yeah, and
also a great day for Media Composer version 5.5 comes out, but that's by the way.
It's a good time if you want to buy one of the old ones.
Yes.
It's a great time. Never been better. Big W is selling at the moment for
less than the retail price.
Like under $400 Australian at the moment.
Yeah, so the retail's now meant to be about $450, and you can get them down at...
$398 or $399 or something, saw them today.
And there's not a huge deal of difference apart from a camera and
two
bit
cameras,
faster.
It's a bit thinner and it's a bit faster.
And the smart cover.
The smart cover was
bad,
really,
it's
really
awesome.
With the magnets built in. But anyway, we're going to go. Adam Turner, as per normal, has a view on these sorts of things. He's been quite vocal in the media on the Sydney Morning Herald, and all of his blogs have written about the new iPad 2. And let's not steal his thunder, shall we?
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
Thinner, lighter, faster. But does the new iPad address any of the original shortcomings?
Having sold 15 million iPads in 9 months, Apple could argue that it knows a thing or two about what people want. So perhaps we shouldn't be surprised that the new iPad is more of the same. Steve Jobs has unveiled a new iPad which is 33% thinner, 15% lighter, and dramatically faster. The killer feature is front and rear cameras, allowing for FaceTime video chat and 720p video capture. Oh yeah, and the screen is 0% sharper. Plus, the iPad 2 has a 0% smaller footprint. It's 0% less expensive and available in 100% more colours, black and white. Have you heard people complain that their iPad isn't thin enough or that their iPad isn't fast enough? People were calling for the iPad's new model to be smaller and or cheaper than its predecessor. They wanted a sharper display along with USB or SD card slots. They wanted Apple to enhance the iPad, not just polish it. Are front and rear cameras really enough to get excited about, particularly considering the iPad is too cumbersome to be practical as a video camera? Once again, it seems the iPad's biggest threat is the latest iPhone, or perhaps the other smartphone that you've got in your pocket. Apple has done little to address the iPad's shortcomings in an effort to lure potential tablet shoppers away from the Android army or other players such as the BlackBerry Playbook. There's little here in the iPad 2 to entice business users, apart perhaps from screen monitoring via HDMI. I'd say there's not much to encourage anyone but Apple diehards to upgrade, who will blindly hand over their cash for any shiny gadget with an Apple logo on the back. The iPad 2 isn't the first iGadget upgrade to be less than earth-shattering. The iPhone 3GS also felt like an incremental upgrade from the 3G, with Cupertino playing catch-up more than anything else. The key difference here is that many of us are already in the habit of regularly chucking away perfectly good smartphones to get one that's slightly better. But not so with tablets. Often you don't feel the financial sting of a smartphone upgrade because the price is hidden away in contract fees. When your contract expires after 12 or 24 months, you slip your old smartphone in the drawer and rush out to get a new one without handing over any extra money. Meanwhile, most tablet owners would have paid cash, north of $600, for their tablet less than 12 months ago. Are we going to assign our tablets to the scrap heap every year or two and spend that much again on a slightly better device? I doubt it. Apple will need to do better than the iPad 2 if it expects people to open their wallets on a regular basis. Now, expect Apple to pull its usual trick of crippling the old model with the new software update, something it's done with the release of every new iPhone to encourage existing owners to upgrade. I'd hold out on upgrading an original iPad to iOS 4.3 until we see whether Cupertino is up to its old tricks again. Once again, Apple is giving customers what Apple wants them to have rather than what they ask for. It's a strategy that won't work forever.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's a valid point he asks, isn't it, JD? Did you notice that, what version, should I say, of OS do you have on your iPhone?
I've got 4.2 now. I upgraded.
Did it slow it down?
Oh, did it what?
So what Adam's conspiracy theory is, he's right with his conspiracy theory, that hold off loading up the new version 4.3 on your iPad until such time as somebody else has done it to realise that it doesn't...
I held off a year before upgrading from 3.1.2.
And it still slowed it down?
Oh, absolutely.
Was it how much? Like, are we talking really, really slow, or are there people out there going... throwing their iPhones at walls and things like that?
Mine's a 3, so it's one. Well, it's the first generation that came out in Australia, and it would take 45 seconds to a minute to allow me to get to SMSs.
Yeah. Wow. That's sorry, I should push this button here. I'm very sorry about that. And what did you say, Lena?
That's why I upgraded to an iPhone.
That's why you did, and I'll push it again. You upgraded to an iPhone for that very reason.
I did, to my iPhone 4, for that exact reason, because it was taking forever to do anything.
But that's what they do. This is the conspiracy theory which Adam speaks of. But anyway, that's life, really, isn't it?
As a bit of an Apple collector, the issue, though, is that at least you can upgrade your old iPhone to the current operating system, whereas in a lot of other platforms, there's no upgrade path whatsoever.
Yeah.
So there is swings and roundabouts.
Very good. All right, let's move on, shall we? Cloud computing, we've all heard of it. We probably don't quite exactly know what it is, apart from the fact that, you know, Gmail sort of resembles a bit of cloud computing. That is, it's something that's stored not on your machine that you can access at another time.
People use things like spreadsheets and Word documents and things like that in the cloud. But realistically, one has to ask what it's like for business and also for, you know, sporting groups and large organisations. Dr. Ron, have you had much to do with the cloud and in your day-to-day running of things?
I have had a little bit to do with the cloud. I like to keep my data in the cloud.
Do you?
Yes. So I don't run out...
What type of data? Personal data? Because this is a question...
No, all data. Documents, spreadsheets, music, audio.
But would you keep data of a personal nature? Date of birth, driver's licence numbers and stuff like that?
I don't really have a need to do that.
But would you?
I don't... I can't see a need to.
You're asking a question with a question.
You're asking me a question that I don't want to answer.
Call me John Fane. Yes, you are.
I can't see a need to keep personal data in the cloud.
All right.
I can see a need to keep data there, and I do keep data there, but documents.
You can't be John Fane because I don't want to punch you in the face.
No, that's good. Please don't.
You're asking me what I keep my credit card numbers and passwords in the cloud.
Yeah, would you? Something that's...
I don't know. I don't know at the moment. They're either stored in my head or they're stored in my browsers, which is all that information stored
locally.
It's
funny, isn't it, though? You've just got that slight little bit of hesitation there about putting that sort of stuff in a place where...
You haven't traditionally stuck it.
There's nothing tangible. There's no place where you can physically touch it or delete it or move it or change it or alter it.
That's right.
It's in someone else's care.
Have you got a PayPal account? I do have a PayPal.
Have you left
with
your credit card details?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
you
got it already.
That's true. Yeah, they've got my bank details too.
Ah.
Yeah, you're right, JD.
See, we've all done it and we don't know it, do we?
It's out there. That's the scariest part.
Yeah. Well, we've got someone who knows all about these sort of things. Josh Rubens is joining us now. Josh is the Managing Director of Cloud Solutions Group. Now, by name, by nature, hopefully, Josh is going to be able to tell us a little bit about the cloud, how safe it is, what it means to business and all that. Josh, good evening to you. What's the cloud all about in your words?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Thanks very much for having me on the show. Well, the cloud, very simply, is the ability to access IT services from third parties over a network. So whether that be hardware, software or services. And I suppose there's a lot of confusion in the market around cloud, even among IT people. And a lot of that is also because of, there's a term called cloud washing. And cloud washing...
Is that like brainwashing?
It's a type of brainwashing.
Really?
And cloud washing is the tendency for a lot of companies to do whatever their old offering was, is to put the word cloud in front of it. So,
I see.
So there's a, you know, that's not... Whatever the word virtualization or server was, you know, they've done an edit replace and put, you know, in their marketing material and put the word cloud in front of it. So that's...
Like Josh, we had, like, commerce organizations suddenly became e-commerce or...
Mm.
Correct.
Yeah, we just suddenly saw E in front of everything there.
Exactly. So, you know, it's for the, I suppose, for the discerning consumer or IT staff person, it's important to really, you know, have a good look at a service and make sure that it is cloud, and also to really understand that your requirements are, you know, that you do need a cloud service, because, yes, maybe a standard service can be what you need.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because as I was alluding to with Dr. Ron, I was trying to pry personal information out of him, as he put it, any personal details online, to which JD did it beautifully. And
JD answered
PayPal
the question
account
for me.
Beautiful. Josh, is it safe? Obviously, you've got different operators out there. Should people shop around? Well, how safe is... Because that leads onto business, and business has the same information that we have personally, like employment records, all sorts of financial information, company records. Should we be wary of companies? How easy is it?
For sure. So, which I'll try and answer your first question.
Sorry, a lot of questions there, wasn't
there? I'm trying to remember your first question.
All right, how safe is it?
Well, I suppose it's another question is how safe is your USB hard drive at home? You know, the one you spent $50 on it, you know, at the local, you know, Dick Smith shop.
It's only 10 at JB, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's a good question. Like, do you mean as in how, if I lost it or if I accidentally deleted it?
Yeah, that exactly. So tendencies for people, you know, people tend to lose data more on USB hard drives and, you know, leave things in airports and lose their
iPad. Also, just in the movies.
Yeah, everyone loses.
It really happens.
That's right. So data loss happens and security breaks happen, you know, in normal settings at home and in business as well. And look, it really is important to understand, to look at your security and compliance requirements. You know, there are a lot of organisations that have compliance requirements, whether they be in health or government or in the finance sector. And in those sorts of organisations, probably right now you wouldn't look at putting your core financial data out into the cloud. But it really is important to have a look at your application stack and review, you know, what are the sort of things we can put out and what are the things, you know, that it's not safe to put out. In general, though, I think there's a lot of fear, uncertainty and doubt, otherwise known as FUD, in the market about security. That seems to be
it's
the...
It's a good acronym, isn't it?
There's a whole new language of acronyms about cloud, cloudonomics, and a few other terms.
Cloudonomics.
There's many others, but... Really, you know, with security, it's important that you look at, you review the providers and you make sure. So, for example, you know, if something's a free service, you wouldn't expect the level of security you're going to get from something that you're paying a lot of money for. And it's also important to review, you know, the contract and the architecture that the various providers use and to make sure it's going to meet your requirements.
What are the benefits of putting things in the cloud, Josh? Why would we do that?
Sure. There's a lot of benefits around cloud. Really, it's about having a more efficient and effective, more efficient and effective IT department. Looking at it from a small business point of view, the cloud really gives small business the ability to compete with large business because they have access to a huge amount of IT resources that would normally, someone starting out a business and they want to compete in the market with a lot of established and large players to get the compute power and the infrastructure and the systems that they need to compete, on a level playing field with these guys. They normally have to invest, $500,000 to $1 million in infrastructure and solutions, whereas with the cloud they can turn stuff on pretty quickly and start getting value out of it straight away and have access to the size and scale of service, that they historically wouldn't be able to have access to.
And so does your business enable small business to do that? Is that the business that you're in?
So, yeah, well, Cloud Solutions Group, so we're an independent broker. So what we do is we really help, we sit at the customer side and we help them, firstly, have a look at what they've got. I mean, that's an important starting point for customers is really look at what you've got internally. Look at your applications, look at your infrastructure, and importantly, look at your strategy. It's not, we're not really about being the cloud cowboys that everything's got to go out to the cloud. It's really working out what's right for your business. And also, another thing to consider is if you've got crap on premise, it's just going to be crap in the cloud. So with a lot of customers, it can be, doing some tidying up internally first before they start moving into the cloud. So we really work with customers to define a bit of a roadmap and a strategy to move different services out into the cloud. So it could be over a two to five year timeline. And generally, we find at the moment a lot of customers are looking at services like email, so sort of context-based services.
That's something that's been in the cloud for a long time that we just take for granted. Email is like the original, cloud-based system, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So you're talking about Gmail and Hotmail.
Absolutely, or even just having mail on a server. If you run your mail in IMAP mode instead of in POP3 mode, the mail actually sits on a server somewhere in the cloud, doesn't it, until you log on and download it.
Yeah, exactly. So more from a business point of view, there still seems to be a little bit of resistance around moving Exchange or whatever their email system is out into the cloud. And some of that's around, concerns around privacy and security. But for most customers, email data is pretty much fine to move out to the cloud. And it's a good example because the cost point has moved down to, it's become realistic. Some of the cloud providers' pricing models are just... they're unrealistic. It's almost, some customers say it's almost like they're trying to make their money back of every single customer they put out. And those
so there are cowboys out there. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe there are, but they seem to be unrealistic in their pricing models.
And I guess that's where you come into it, being a broker, which is an interesting concept. I'm thinking broker as in like an insurance broker where you assess my needs and say, well, this company has this offering, this company has that, and this one has that. That's basically what you do, in essence. So you look at what someone has in-house and says, well, this option's best for you.
Correct. And then we actually go into the process of architecting the solution, getting into the migration and actually implementing the service as well. So we don't just make some recommendations and run away. We actually work with the customer over the process.
What size company would you be dealing with? Are we talking about small business as in five or less? Are we talking like a small family business, maybe two people? Or are we talking 20, 100, 200 types of people?
Sure. More in the 100 to 2,000 sort of seat spaces where it's called... every country has a different, it's called the mid-market, I suppose, in Australia, mid-market/corporate market.
Mm-hmm. And how are you finding the resistance with IT gurus? Because a lot of those companies would have a couple, I would imagine, on staff looking after everything from the local, you know, PC at the receptionist right through. Are they finding this a threat? Is this new cloud technology something that's really becoming a concern for them?
There's also a feeling of relinquishing control as well from an administrator's point of view, and that must be something that you come up against a lot of opposition
that's,
from.
That's got to be good for a CEO of a company, because a lot of companies place 100% absolute faith in an IT guy. They know everything. They know the business passwords to everything. They know everything about an employee, or they have access to it. And this has got to be like,
ooh, a lot of trust.
A lot of trust is put in the IT stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll laugh. I was laughing earlier, but that comment. I've had a range of responses from outright enthusiasm to absolute contempt. Mm-hmm. I've had some customers be pretty much contemptuous. It was quite funny. I was in a customer site. I won't say the business name. They're a well-known brand name, and I walked in, and the infrastructure manager laughingly said, "Quick, get him. He's here to take our servers away." I thought,
check his bags before he leaves.
Yeah, correct. So, look, a lot of the IT guys, a lot of them are worried about how it's going to affect their jobs, and unfortunately,
should they be?
Well. Not really, and I think unfortunately it's stopping them from adopting something that can really help them.
That's what I would have thought.
Help them and their businesses.
Because cloud computing, to me as an IT guy, would be great. Oh, it's one less thing I have to worry about.
Yeah.
But you still have to be there to meet the needs of your people on the floor at the salt mine, so to speak, of fixing their computers and getting their emails working and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, I guess different way of thinking, isn't it?
Well, exactly. Well, to me, it's really about making the IT guys' job a bit more interesting than it is at the moment. So at the moment, they spend a lot of time doing management maintenance on hardware, the pretty boring plumbing stuff, and it gives them the opportunity to work more at a business level, at an application level, mm-hmm. and do things that actually help the business and solve business problems.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, it's going to make the IT guys' life a bit more interesting. Mm-hmm. So
you used the word applications there, Josh. By the way, we're talking to Josh Rubens, the Managing Director of Cloud Solutions Group, brokers of the cloud things these days. Applications on iPhones, on iPads, on all these smart things that are coming out.
Yep.
They're all in the cloud, aren't they?
Exactly. So everyone's using the cloud and the
We just don't know it, as Justin highlighted beautifully to Dr. Ron before. So it's just the way it's going to be, isn't it?
That's right. It's called the consumerization of IT. So everyone is really, I reckon in 5 to 10 years, it's not going to be called cloud computing. It's just going to be computing. It's going to be the way that we're doing things. And as an aside, the iPad is a really good cloud enabling piece of kit. I've got one myself. I love it because it doesn't have a lot of processing power. It doesn't have much of a hard drive in it. So really you need that power and processing to be done in the cloud or to be done somewhere else, and you can work locally and go out to Dropbox or Box.net or Google Apps and store your documents and your data up in the cloud and walk around locally with it. So it's a pretty cool.
So what's the key to cloud computing? Because what you described, Josh, it sounds like the network computer that people used to talk about in the 80s and the 90s, but
that's right.
We just couldn't do it. So what's changed to enable it now?
Yeah, good question, that. And I get that a lot, especially from the older CIO. Is this is bureaus, guys. What's new here? We started 30 years ago with green screens and we used to share computing power out of a large mainframe. Look, a fair bit has changed, and really what's happened is around the commoditization of a lot of the hardware. And another big change is something that a lot of the listeners might be familiar with is a technology called virtualization. And virtualization is really about the concept of having multi-tenant, being able to share. It's really about multi-tenancy, to be able to have multiple applications sharing the same piece of physical hardware. But this technology was only used to be in very expensive mainframe computers, which were millions of dollars, and the IBMs really led that space. Now it's come down into more the Wintel space, so the Intel with the Intel chipset and the Windows space. So that's really the maturity of that technology has driven down the costs, and now we can do now we're able to do these things at a reasonable price. And the other thing is also the web's come a long way, and also bandwidth has become a lot cheaper as well. And with the NBN, if it ever actually gets rolled out,
oh, another cynic.
That's
a realist, Andrew.
A realist, is that the word?
Cynic is what an idealist calls a realist.
Okay, yeah, good.
I think, you know, Australia, if it's delivered as promised with a gig to the household, that's really going to, you know, that's going to change. It's going to make Australia like a leader, a global leader in cloud computing.
So, Josh, you mentioned virtualization. So if I've got a favourite program, a CAD drawing application or music program or something, and I want to move to the cloud because I want to share it with, you know, my company overseas and so forth,
yep.
Do I need to virtualize my program, my application, or can I run it locally and share the data? What's the best model, do you think?
Yeah, well, it certainly makes it more challenging if something on-premise is on physical hardware. It makes it harder to... So you could move your data out to the cloud and share it as a... So it's basically moving your file server from, you know, your on-premise environment up to the cloud. It's just you need to make sure if you had a CAD drawing and it was a large, you know, couple of gig drawing, that's something we wouldn't recommend. That's not a good use case for the cloud because you need pretty big pipes to download that data.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, yeah, it's recommended for people to virtualize their applications. So basically what they're doing is abstracting it away from the physical hardware, and that makes it a lot more transportable over a network up to a cloud provider.
So are there any applications you can't virtualize?
There's a few legacy type apps, and I do get this question, and legacy hardware, legacy pieces of hardware, generally ones that have third-party dongles on them, that's locked
to the hardware itself.
Correct, mm-hmm. Correct. So virtualization is really about abstracting away from the hardware. And look, and there are solutions you can do to virtualize those applications, but yeah, we're getting into...
But as time goes by, they'll disappear anyway.
Correct.
You assume?
Yeah, so they'll all become software-based, so they'll all move into software over time, and then, yeah, they'll be able to be virtualized and therefore more... Cloudable, I suppose, if you like.
There's that word again. Cloudable.
Yeah. Apologies.
The English, the English language is being bastardised by technology. I'm certainly sure of that, and the cloud's going to have its fair share of it as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit. Well, you mentioned bandwidth there, Josh, which I think is really important, and especially for, I guess, you talk about mums and dads at home and things that they may want to do on the cloud. I guess, you know, like the family photos, you want to have the off-site backup and things like that. I guess you look at what we have on the market today from the big guys like the Googles and the Microsofts and things like that. There's other things that you can now get offered to you as well. There are all sorts of, I think, A-Drive is another one.
A-Drive.com?
Yeah. Dropbox and things like that.
I use a backup system at home called Carbonite, which just sits in the background of my PC and it just trickles upstream continuously, so everything just gets backed up in the cloud.
Yeah, and
so
there's Backblaze and quite a few others that are very cheap and good for a consumer.
Yep. So the benefit of this, I'm obviously this is what your main sphere because you're in business, but are there any of these, are they all pretty much the same, or are some better than others, do you find, with these like consumer-level cloud services?
Yeah, with the consumer-level ones, I suppose some of them have options where you can get them to make sure that they're backing up their backup, so they have a replica of your data, so you don't just have one copy in the cloud, because then it's, you know, as... going to be as resilient as having it on your local hard drive. So you can, I suppose, pay extra for different levels of resilience. So it's important to really
and
have a look
key,
at the
isn't
service.
It? You've got to pay for something. All credit to Google, they do some amazing stuff, but it's a free service. So at the end of the day, if you come back and say, you lost my stuff, well, what are you going to do? Loss of, it's what do you expect for free type sort of thing.
Exactly, and they had a well-publicised outage last week of Gmail, where I think...
For 4 days or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was... 2% of their users or something were affected by it. It was like 35,000 users, but a lot of them were on the free service.
Yeah.
Google has an enterprise service, and you know, I'm not really trying to spruik about Google, but I suppose as an example, with the enterprise service, you pay for it though.
That's the difference between paying for it and paying for it. And so, what that was not affected, or they had a SLA type, a service level agreement to get it back up and running.
Well, what they had to do with that consumer level one is they were actually restoring from tape. So that's
really?
Yeah, that's right.
Tape. I didn't think anyone had tape anymore.
A lot of enterprises are still backing up the tape. You'd be surprised.
Wow, because offsite backups are pretty important, both for personal use and also for business use. I would imagine.
Yep, that's right.
You look at what happened in poor old Queensland with the floods and things like that. Mm. There are a few data centres, I think I saw in the mainstream media, that were literally going under Yeah. When we saw it up there. Is there any new... There was a cloud company up there, wasn't there?
That's right. Polaris Data Center in Spring Hill in Brisbane had a power outage. Someone was doing a test on a UPS and brought everything down to its knees. I think that's also, I suppose, the point I'm trying to make is really it's important when you're going out to the cloud, if you're a business, is to look at your contract, look at what you're paying for, particularly from a redundancy point of view. So a lot of good cloud providers, you'll pay a bit extra for this, but what they'll do is they'll replicate your data to another data center. So what that means is if you have an outage in a particular data center, you shouldn't really notice any difference because it will have failed over automatically to another site. So, for example, Microsoft with their online services platform, they fell over from Singapore to Hong Kong. So that, you know, that's how they give you the redundancy.
Josh, one of the concerns I've got about personal cloud computing isn't so much the security, because I think, you know, you can assess that even as a basic user about your level of comfort of being able to get in and keeping others out. But my concern is about who owns the data at the end and whether there's any leakage across into somebody else's ownership when you upload a photo to a photo repository, that sort of thing.
Sure, and Facebook certainly didn't help when they published initially that we own your data and we're going to sell it, and then they reneged on that. That's definitely, you know, in the consumer space again, that's an issue.
And how do you get around that? Are there people that give you like business undertakings that the data's yours and they can verify that it's not there when you've deleted it, that sort of thing?
I haven't had a look at the contracts from a consumer point of view, but I know in the enterprise level, in contracts, a lot of the reputable cloud providers will say explicitly in the contract is you own your data. Mm. So we don't own your data, you own your data, you can come and get it at any particular point in time. Mm. So I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't had a look at the consumer contracts, but I know at the business level, that's the way that they go about it.
Josh, crystal ball time. Obviously, the cloud's here to stay.
Yep.
What are we going to be using in 5 or 10 years' time? Is it going to be anything that resembles what we're seeing today, or are we about to see, like, the Industrial Revolution kick in again and computers are just going to become iPads, for want of a better term, you know, lightweight, small devices that we carry around in our bags and sit on our beds at night? Are we going to just push everything online to the cloud? Is that where it's going to go?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I think, so devices like iPads and iPhones are going to be the way to go, and everything's going to be accessed, you know, through central locations and data centers out of the cloud. That's going to be the way. Those things will get lighter. They'll get better as bandwidth will come down in price. It's just
the key to it, isn't it? Bandwidth, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the way things are going. For example, Microsoft within 2 years they'll be making new releases in the cloud first and then in on-premise. So a lot of the major vendors, including, you know, IBM, Amazon. A lot of the Oracle, a lot of these vendors are driving, you know, they're moving everything to the cloud. So that's going to drive people that way, whether some people like it or not.
Mm. And Guy in our chat saying, so the cloud backups are backed up in the cloud too. So I think you mentioned that before, didn't you? That's
correct.
Yeah, so just that extra added bit. And that's what you pay for when you're looking for a good cloud hosting.
That's right.
For service.
That's right.
All right. I think it's going to be an exciting time as we move into the cloud. For business, it's a different... I think businesses have to get their head around it a little bit too, because no one... It's all moving too fast, like everything in technology these days. But it's here and it's now, isn't it? And that's what everyone's got to get used to.
Yeah, exactly. And where a lot of businesses are looking at the cloud at the moment, I mean, because control is such an important aspect, is they're looking at something called private cloud.
Is it like a virtual private cloud? A VPC? Sorry.
Yeah. It's called a virtual data center.
Okay, well, there you go. No more acronyms.
You're not too far off. What a lot of customers are doing is really they're trying to build that scale and flexibility and agility within their own data center. So they're looking. So a lot of customers have virtualized their environment using a technology called VMware, which is the market leader.
Yep.
And some of them think that I've got VMware, so I've got private cloud. Well, no, it's not a cloud unless it, you know, I don't want to sound anal retentive, but a cloud is something to be called a cloud. It has to be on demand, pay per use, rapid elasticity, so you can scale up and down on demand, and self service. So those are really, you know, for something to be a cloud, that's a definition of a cloud. So if it's just a VMware, a virtual, you know, server environment, that's not really cloud computing. So what they're doing is a lot of these vendors, there's a whole new stack of vendors that's growing, and that's where all the venture capital money is going, you know, Silicon Valley is going into the private cloud space. And also, I bring up the word, the cloud brokering space. So where it's going to move to is you have, You have your virtual environment, and then there's something called a cloud operating system that sits on top of your virtual environment. I know it could be losing most of the audience here, but what it's doing is it's abstracting from that environment, and then it's allowing you to get that management and redundancy across your on-premise environment. And then you have these pieces of cloud brokering software that will sit on top of that. And what they will do is they will talk to multiple clouds. So the vision is within a couple of years' time, and there's technologies like Rightscale and Stratus, and this was in a company called actually Eucalyptus. It's not an Australian one, but it's doing it at the moment. Is you can have the ability to really to have a Dropbox and select, whether it's Amazon, Rackspace, GoGrid.
And you can choose your own cloud.
And it will just deploy it for you and manage it for you and give you that level of control and security that a lot of customers are hungering for. And that's called hybrid. By the way, that's called hybrid cloud.
Skynet is next.
Yeah, that's right.
Should you spread the load? We've spoken, in the early days when web hosting came around, you could get a host here in Australia, or you could get an offshore host. And obviously with the offshore host came the certain issues. There's a lot of things that can break between here and an offshore host.
Yep. Might be a lot cheaper, but not necessarily as secure.
Does the same thing apply here in Australia? Are there many organisations setting up to do cloud hosting in Australia?
There are. As I said earlier, there's a lot of cloud washing and people who are just manage services and hosting providers who
We have to be able to see through the cloud, don't we, to the silver lining and choose the right company.
That's the problem with the team.
That's what
cloud.
You do, isn't it?
That's exactly what we do. We help customers do that.
Have you got a website, Josh, where people can come for more information and all that sort of stuff?
Yes, I do. It's www.cloudsolutionsgroup.com.au, and that's solutions with an S on it.
Excellent. And what can people find there, apart from obviously a bit about you and the company? Is there how-tos or white papers? What's there?
Sort of a bit of information about the cloud and some good cloud use cases, and if anyone wants further information, they can... Got our contact details on the cloud, so feel free to give me a call, and we'd love to have a chat.
I've learned a lot tonight, Josh. It's good. I'm feeling a little bit better about the cloud, and Dr. Ron's still working out that damn PayPal's got his credit card details.
Spewing that JD picked me up on that one. Yeah, okay.
No, well, thank you, and I've learned a lot about radio tonight.
Oh, good on you, Josh. All right. Back with more after this.
You're listening.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOSS as well?
Steve Wozniak, there was
a traitor. I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click it, upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic, all right.
That's why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron, I was reading some of your tweets. Tweets, or it might have been in a Facebook post or something during the course of the week. You were sitting on a train doing whatever you do on trains with you listening to the podcast, I hope.
Podcast is Charlie Pressing on a train.
And you made
a car on a train.
You made an observation that Kindles were all the rage.
I did. I noticed that. I walked into a train carriage. And
then someone...
Well, the person sitting beside me at the station was using one, sitting right beside me, and I'm flicking through an e-book, and I thought, oh, how quaint, they're using one of those newfangled Kindles. And then I got on the train, and there was someone directly in front of me as I walked on, and then I found a seat, and a person sitting across from me was using one as well. Three people in the space of about 2 minutes.
What's going on?
That's amazing. Well, I think Jeff Gates answered the question quite well on my Facebook...
There was a Kindle convention on
Facebook
the train.
Wall. There was a... Yes. It was a special...
He's been off for a couple of weeks. He's firing.
Oh, he's full of all the good one-liners, isn't he, tonight, JD? Now, it was... the comment from Jeff Gates was, well... You'll start seeing them around now that they've become cheap. And I had a look, actually. You can buy them from $139 on Amazon.com. So they really are a dime a dozen these days.
Cheaper than an iPad.
Much cheaper.
Yeah.
Even cheaper than the first generation.
What are the books like? How much do they cost? Because they're a 3G device, aren't they? You plug a SIM card in and...
Both.
And that's it.
Without preempting the gadget of the week too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. A couple of different models. So we'll have a look at it a little bit later down the other end of the show. But yeah, you can buy books online. You can get free ones. Ones where the copyright... has expired owing to the
you know, the date's been and gone.
Yeah, something that Beethoven wrote.
Yeah, some of the old classics and things you can download for free. You don't have to pay for them.
I was just reading in your Facebook post, Tony D said, seen heaps of Kindles over the past few weeks, probably more than iPads on the train. I'm at the verge of buying one. Sat next to a guy on the train the other day. Sunshine, fluoro lights, tunnels had no impact on the display. And as a result, he was very impressed. He loaded up the Kindle and reader apps on his iPhone, but they're okay, but not a patch on the Kindle.
Yeah, the Digital Ink is just fantastic.
Digital Ink, that's what they call it, is it?
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that was pretty good.
E-Ink, thank you, Graham.
E-Ink,
yes.
Yeah. All right, that's good. Now, just briefly, some movie news. I'm very distressed to realise that a certain company is going to be remaking Blade Runner. Could you imagine Blade Runner being remade? That's just...
Without Harrison Ford.
That's, yes. Well, I don't know. All I've read is that there is a remake of Blade Runner coming. Mm. And I'm sort of thinking, well, that's a classic. You want to do it really well to go there. But anyway, the main reason that I want to talk movies a little bit tonight is about George Lucas's Star Wars. You know, all Star Wars addicts.
Yeah.
Nah, never seen one.
Oh. No? Okay.
No.
Well, you may have noticed, well, Lena probably hasn't noticed, but others may have noticed that there's no such thing on Blu-ray as Star Wars at this particular point in time. And there's good reason for that. Fox and Lucasfilm have arranged a Valentine for Star Wars. These two film houses have got together. In 2012, the saga's first 3D converted installment, premiering February 10 next year, will be coming out sort of to your Blu-ray player, which is not all bad, but they're going to rejig it all, as in 3D at all, which is...
So we'll have 3D Star Wars on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
We'll have all these useless little animals running around in the background in 3D. Right?
Well, I don't know.
Can they fix Jar Jar Binks? Can they, remove him?
Can they airbrush him out or something and do him properly?
Dear. Anyway, it's coming out, it's going to be in numeric order, which is probably good, really. So first up is Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Now, I think the first ones were made more recently, so that gives George a bit of time to work on Episodes 4, 5, and 6. So we'll probably see, what's that, 10 years of, no, there's 9 eps, isn't there, that have come out?
Says
six. Oh, he wrote 9, but there's only made 6. Something like that. Someone will correct me. But so we've got 6 years of rollouts of Star Wars coming in 3D. Blu-ray. Here it all comes.
Hey, Spielberg bought the rights to the WikiLeaks saga. Did you hear about that one?
I did.
Ah,
that's
going to
be interesting.
Who would play Assange, do you reckon?
Eric Banner.
Really?
Hmm.
No, he's too manly.
Hmm.
What are you saying?
Well, Assange has a delicate frame.
You have problems with handshakes, I hear, haven't you?
I like a good firm handshake.
Do you think Mr. Assange is going to be one of those...
I reckon he'd be a dead fish handshake.
A dead fish. That's the word, isn't it?
Gross.
Someone put a current photo of Julian Assange beside Mr. Humphreys. I know you're being served.
Yeah, oh, yes. I saw that.
Really?
Very similar.
I think I tweeted it.
You think you did?
Yeah. It was very funny.
Is Mr. Humphreys still alive?
That could be the difference. No. I don't think he is. No. The actor that played Mr. Humphreys.
Dead ringer.
So there you go, a bit of film news, tech talk-wise.
Mm.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Charlie Sheen, because everybody else has.
Oh, can we not?
Let's just briefly talk about Charlie Sheen.
Of him.
Of talking about Charlie?
Yes.
Okay, well, you can go and get a drink or something while we talk just briefly about this. The man is, if you've come out from underneath a rock somewhere, his sitcom was axed because of... words that he used in describing the how should one say the directors of the movie houses that were involved in,
among other reasons.
Yes, but this was probably the main reason.
Various,
you don't bite the hand issues that feeds you in the television/movie industry. So as a result, they said, "Nah, that's it, show over." So Charlie's taken to making his own show on Twitter and on Ustream, believe it or not. So. Now, did you talk about this in the news, Dr. Ron?
I did talk about it in the news. Two things, not the Ustream, but in terms of his Twitter account. The one thing that's worth mentioning, apart from Graham and Lena and what you think of the man, it certainly
is. His social networking prowess is something to be admired, isn't
it's an interesting achievement. Now, in probably less than a week, he now has just over 2 million followers on Twitter. Within 24 hours, he had over 1 million. Over 1 million followers in less than... I think it was 24 hours and 30 minutes or something.
I'm not entirely sure that one's number of Twitter followers is a good measure of...
That's because you don't have any.
I was going to say
that's true. I have about four followers. That's correct.
Yeah, but you hide your tweets.
I do. I don't think that having a lot of Twitter followers is necessarily a measure of being a worthwhile individual.
No, but the yardstick is not necessarily how popularity is taken.
Perhaps
off.
That's right.
Who's the number one Twitterer? Ashton
Kutcher.
Whoever. Yes, that. That 8 plus K. Person, yes.
Mm. What happened to Stephen? But it is nevertheless an extraordinary yardstick.
It's incredible. Technologically, incredible.
The other thing which Andrew referred to was the Ustream feed. He put a Ustream show up on yesterday, Melbourne time, about this time yesterday,
before
Melbourne
time. Before you talk about this, tell everyone what Ustream is.
Justin, while I find the number that I want to find in my notes here.
Ustream's it's a cloud computing entity. So
funny about that, isn't it?
Yeah, and we use it, of course, and some of our listeners are currently logged in. Let's just have a quick
look. But Ustream allows anyone to become a TV station, really, doesn't it?
That's right.
Because to broadcast, it costs nothing.
All you need is a webcam and a microphone.
You can upload your videos, you can stream your videos, you can keep your videos there for people to play back, which we do.
So, in theory, this is how the social networking thing all fits together. These guys can tweet about things that are on Ustream, and people click the link, and then they watch it.
And, in fact, Ustream itself has its own little messaging service, so you can actually chat within that as well.
Yeah.
Within a few minutes of him going live on the Ustream channel, when I logged on to have a look, he had 115,000 viewers.
He's subscribed on national US TV, so it's not too surprising a lot of people followed him pretty quickly.
Mm.
Well, it looks like, according to the Hollywood Reporter site...
And Ustream stayed up, too, which was impressive. Sorry, Andrew, go on.
Is it up
now? No, that's... Ustream's up. Our Ustream's up now, but I wonder if this is going to cause... It'll put a lot of load on Ustream. I don't know if they were expecting suddenly to have 120,000 connects in the space of half an hour, but they did, and the system held up quite well.
Well, that's good. They must have good...
good pipes, infrastructure.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, all the ads that they play, you'd expect them to have good infrastructure.
Oh, there you go. The Hollywood Reporter website said that the wayward actor could make up to $1 million a year for endorsing products on the microblogging site Adly, which is interesting. So maybe he can tweet and do ads and stuff like that at the same time. But if you put that into perspective, his TV show, he got $1.5 million an episode.
1.8, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
I think it was 1.8. It was close to 2.
Oh, there you go.
That's
so
ridiculous.
He's on the outer at the moment. Only a mil a year now.
Only a mil a year.
That'll really curb his lifestyle, won't it?
Suffering your jocks.
Oh, dear. Obviously, Lena, you have no qualms about this kind of man.
Have to cut back on his Cuban cigar budget.
What did he say to you?
Expenditure.
He's just a tool.
His booker expenditure.
His hooker expenditure and his Cuban cigar budget.
That's where it all started, wasn't it? One of his parties.
Because they're porn stars.
Is that what it is?
They're different, apparently. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I think this is one of those situations where...
you can't get arrested for sleeping with porn stars, you see. The other way around.
Ah.
Yes.
I was going to refer more...
Because it's not illegal to be a porn star. Sorry, Graham. Continue.
If you're quite finished?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay. I was going to say, more generally, rather than on that specific point, this is one of those situations where we have to separate the admiration for the man's skill as an actor and his skill in performing from his personal lifestyle.
I think both are pretty ordinary.
He and William Shatner would be a pair, wouldn't they?
There's a lot of people who very much enjoy 2.5 Men and some of his...
Not me.
No, not you. But
I very much enjoy it. I think it's a very funny television show.
It used to be cool.
I gave up Warcraft for you, Lena. What else do you want me to do? You're going to bring me to my knees. I'm going to give up 2.5 Men as well as World of Warcraft.
Yes, you will.
It's compulsorily given up. They're not making it anymore.
I'll be a husk of my former self by the time you're done with me.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. That's all you can say. Oh, well. Oh, well.
We knew him when.
Warcraft, 2.5 Men. What's next?
Well, yes.
Behave yourself.
What's next? IE6. Can we talk briefly?
We spoke a little bit about the worst.
We spoke a little bit about that.
I want you to get rid of IE6.
Why
don't
you give up IE6?
That's the next thing they're telling me.
That's why I was linking this beautifully.
You definitely should already have given up your IE6.
Hey, Dr. Ron, you know DOS is dead, don't you?
What, get rid of that.
3. I've up to 601 now, I think I'm running. Yeah, I've upgraded from 3.3.
I came across a really good little video, which I think I tweeted during the course of the weekend. If not, I've certainly put up on my Facebook account. And it's a video that shows upgrades from DOS, basically DOS 1, all the way through to Windows 7, some 23 odd years of Microsoft's
ironclad grip on operating systems through the times. And it was really quite an interesting little eye-opener. It went for 9 minutes, but it seemed like just five because it went through so quickly. But what they did was they actually took a version of Office and they put a program. They put two programs. There was a donkey game and another game that they put on there, and they upgraded it from DOS 1 to DOS 2 to DOS 5 to Windows 3.13, then to Windows 3.11, then to Windows 95, and I think that's where you are at the moment, isn't it, Dr. Ron? Then Windows 98, then Windows 2000, then Windows XP, then Windows 7. And to Microsoft's...
No Vista.
No, that actually, I lied. Oh. Vista was in there. To Microsoft's credit, the DOS game still worked all the way through 23 years of...
Evolution of operating systems.
From back in the good old, you know, the ASCII, you'd love this, it says he pointing at Lena. The old ASCII games where you had 16 colours and then it went to 256 colours and what do they call it? They dithered. Dithered graphics. Remember them? They were horrific, weren't they? ASCII key characters and ASCII codes where people used to draw pictures and ASCII things.
People still do that.
Yes, obviously.
In emails, dirty emails. People write things in the ASCII code. You've seen it. I'm sure you have. Everyone's seen it.
ASCII art.
ASCII art. That's right. That's the one.
There was used to be programs to do ASCII art things and things like that, didn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so, Dr. Ron, you're going to kick the IE 600 because that's, what, 11 years old now. Sorry, Grant, you remember?
I was going to say, I remember working at a company in the early 90s, I think it was, where one of the requirements of their company logo was that it could be rendered successfully in ASCII purely.
Yeah. And it could?
It could, yes. It was a very well-designed logo.
Because that way you could print it out in your on your inkjet printers?
That's right, yeah.
They were in dot matrix printers back then?
Yeah. And you could print it on text-only terminals, which was their requirement. Mm. Yeah.
When did we get mouses?
In 1980-something. You'd have to talk to Xerox about that.
Mises.
77.
Oh, 77, thank you.
Wow.
And Alan Turing came up with the idea in the 1940s.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm.
I was using IE6 extensively today, unfortunately, because I was at work. And the standard...
Can you, in all seriousness, the standard how do you surf the web on that? Are you looking internally or are you looking externally?
No, I'm looking both, internally and externally. So it's, appalling.
You go to a website...
It's dangerous. And I often get errors that say, I'm sorry, but your browser's not supported here, please upgrade.
I think I built a page on the Tech Talk website, which basically... It's purely for you, actually.
I know, yeah.
It's for your benefit, actually.
I think I can't view the Tech Talk Radio website anymore. I just get an abusive message. So, Dr. Ron, upgrade your browser. Yeah, unfortunately, the SOE, or the standard operating environment, which is installed on all of the computers that I use at work, in a government agency in Victoria, they all have Internet Explorer 6 installed. And it's sad, very, very sad.
I think we've covered this off before, but I've got to ask the question. Is there any reason why...
Yes.
These people use these
Why, but you go.
What's the reason, Lena?
I'll give you the dumbed-down version, because that's how I roll.
don't believe that for a minute, ladies and gentlemen.
Because they use a lot of third-party database-y type things, and if they change it, they'd have to buy all brand-new ones or something like that.
Half or most, if not all, of their web-based applications will probably break and stop working. They don't want to pay developers to... bring those applications up to current standards.
It'd be millions of dollars, wouldn't it, to do that?
Oh, millions and millions,
millions
and millions.
Millions and millions, yeah.
And it's unlike the... I'm not going to get there and twist it. No. Anyway.
Yeah. It would break everything.
Unlike the Victorian government to worry about wasting millions of dollars on such things. But anyway...
I was just curious to know why people still stick with IE6.
It's not a matter of people still sticking with IE6. It's a stupid corporate IT decision to stay rooted in technology which is 10 years old.
And dangerous.
And thank you, Graham. You just want to make that point, don't you?
Yes.
It's an important point.
It is a point well made.
It might be a different situation in a corporate network, but if you're running IE6 on your home machine, you are seriously part of the problem. You almost certainly have spyware on your machine now. You're almost certainly contributing to the spam problem. You're almost certainly contributing to the general badness of the internet. Don't do it.
There's a website. It's called allthews.theie6countdown.com. Very interesting website, sponsored by Microsoft, to try and get people to stop using their product in the nicest possible way.
To use a more updated product.
Yes. They even give you little banners there that you can put on your website for people who work in government environments that are using IE6. So there's got to be a turning point at some stage where people will finally go, right, that's it, we've got to upgrade,
this is
spend the money,
when,
get the databases updated.
It's long past in the case of IE 6.
This is what annoys me when people hate on Apple for little things they might have got wrong in the past, and they, you know, champion Microsoft.
little things.
Microsoft Microsoft made an internet browser that they've now come out and said, do not connect it to the internet.
Winner, it's 10 years
ago.
No,
that's pretty big compared to stuff.
Hang on a minute. No, that's unfair. Any browser that was made when IE6 was made would be unsafe to use now, no matter who made it.
Yeah, but they did say it
was a Safari from that era is no more secure than IE6.
None of us will be using Netscape Navigator.
That's
right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A Victorian government website told me to use Netscape.
In the interest of preserving Dr. Ron's sanity and his security at work, anybody who's listening that's a web developer, would they please put up an IE6 page that says, Dr. Ron, please upgrade your web browser, and I'll show it to my IT people
at work. I've done that. The TikTok page.
Yeah, you've done it, yeah, but I'm saying everybody listening, please do that. Send me your links, send me your websites that don't work in IE6.
I've heard of people putting scripts on their websites that flip people the bird if they're accessing it through IE6.
That's what I want to see. And I'll collaborate with key stakeholders. I will move forward, and I will... Yes.
You've been working
for a government department for too long.
I have.
That's federal, though, moving forward.
Moving forward? Oh, yes. No, we move forward where I am too.
We consult
with stakeholders.
In the federal government stuff.
Whilst we're chatting, I've made a mistake. Douglas Engelbart invented the mouse.
That's
in
a wicked name. That is a good name. Engelbart.
And Dougie to his friends.
So there you go. And it was made of wood, the original one.
Ooh.
Well, of course it was.
Mm. I have a tweet here in front of me, which I was going to actually mention earlier on during the course of the week. It's directed from someone whose name is Fiona. Now, she tweeted this thing to Tech Talk Radio and to you, Lena, during the course of the week that said, breaking news, all in capitals with an exclamation mark on it. Grass is Lena caught using non-Apple product. What's the story here?
I don't know what you're talking about. It's not true. It's not true. It can't be true.
I nearly turned to my grave when I read that tweet.
I even eat Apple products.
You're not in your grave yet.
I don't know what you use
non-Apple products all
yes,
the time.
I
you
do.
Use your PlayStations
I do,
and your
I do. I have many
Nintendo
non-Apple
things
products.
And
I love my
else.
PC. I have a PC.
You have a PC?
And I love it.
Really?
There you
yep.
go.
Oh,
excellent.
Hmm.
Did you watch Mr. Jobs' launch?
And stuff all over
Speaking
it.
Of PCs.
No, I didn't. I didn't. No.
Did you watch JD?
Not live. I didn't know it was on.
Really?
So I had to watch it afterwards.
I was asleep.
Because he came across with some fairly interesting statistics about iBooks and things like that as well, which was... Yeah, but you don't have to be asleep, sorry to digress. You can click the link. I tweeted it later, and you can go back and watch it. It's quite an interesting...
Yeah.
He is the consummate professional when it comes to delivering those keynote addresses.
I'd much rather
like
take the summaries from all the journalists afterwards than
would you?
Listen to him. Yeah, because he says some hyperbolic.
You have to get past
hyperbolic?
The reality distortion field.
Hyperbaric,
yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah,
hyperbaric.
That's right.
Anyway, we need some balance here. We've been talking a lot about Apple lately. Next week on Tech Talk Radio, all things going according to plan, because we've already moved this once. Mr. Glover, Dave Glover from Microsoft, will be in to talk about Phone 7 and where it's at.
Not Danny Glover.
No, he's not coming in to talk about Phone 7.
He's obsessed with television and movies at the moment, isn't he?
No, he probably doesn't know what Phone 7 is, but Dave Glover, who does, who works for Microsoft and he's here in town, so we're going to catch up on where it's at the moment, which is quite good because Brian, in our office, bought a Microsoft 7 phone the other day. He went out on a limb and he bought one, and he's still a little bit, how should I say, frustrated is the wrong word. He's just coming to terms with it, I think, is probably the way.
It's a whole new operating system.
It's a new way of looking at things, a new way of thinking about things and all that sort of stuff. So, anyway, I might get some of his thoughts about the pros and cons, and we'll roll it in next
week.
Drag him in
one night.
Oh, yes, right. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Android smartphones have gone ballistic. Dr. Roy, I'm glad you could make it.
Thanks for having me.
There's something really wrong going on in this country with the price of petrol.
Time to buy from the US all those collectors out there.
Absolutely.
You went, oh, duh, Dr. Roy, I know you listen to your own news segments.
And it was a particularly violent game.
And I think that's a damn fine thing for those that need it.
He's an Apple snob. He's even bigger than you.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, yes. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. We have another segment on our program, which is coming up. It's called the application of the week. We mix it in with the odd spot and the website and the gadget.
Yeah, down that back end of the program where all the fun stuff happens.
All the fun stuff. Yeah, the Manic Minute, as I think you guys have called it in a lot of times. We haven't had one of those this year yet, I don't think, a Manic Minute. We've paced ourselves just beautifully. But anyway, some good news. If you have an application which you really love, that you reckon is the ant's pants, and all those other superlatives.
All the bee's knees.
Yeah, bee's knees is another superlative that we can drop in there. Dr. Ron, you should have the plenty
cat,
of the
cat's meow.
Cat I haven't pajamas. Heard that one.
Cat pajamas.
Yeah, okay. If you've got a yes, I'll pull a fader down in a minute. If you've got an application out there that you reckon is fantastic, and we think it's pretty fantastic too, we've got some prizes. Did you know?
Prizes.
Prizes.
Are you serious?
Graham was organising like this prizes. With Adam today. I saw
and,
that.
And Mark, yeah.
If you go to the web, the Tech Talk Radio website, techtalkradio.com.au,
yep.
On the right-hand side, there's a thing that says Gadget Website Hotspot Application of the Week. Click here and tell us yours. If you click that image there that's on our website, it will take you through to a page where you can put in your favourite
application
of the week. Now, we want applications, okay? We want apps. I know you can also put websites and all the other stuff in there as well. But what we thought we'd do is if you want a Plantronics M100, which is a solid mid-range Bluetooth headset, especially for the iPhone, because it has a built-in battery meter. It tells you how your battery's going.
But it will work with other phones as well.
Yes,
it will work. Fancy we're, battery meter feature.
Their recommended retails are a bit over $100, but we're going to give away four of these.
Are you serious?
No. Don't call me serious.
You're not serious. Win one of four just by telling us your favourite app and why.
Yeah.
Can we enter?
No.
Oh.
Well, you can. Because it'll be good. We'll ring out and then we'll go, the winner is not Dr. Ron.
Damn it.
You haven't got an app. You haven't got an iPhone anyway.
You've been busy. You've done lots of work here, haven't you? That's good.
Oh, yeah, it all happened today.
The week, of the week, app of the week, odd spot. So people can send in their suggestions for any of those segments.
Yeah, so we got four of these devices to give away. And we reckon what we'll do is we'll look at all the apps and we'll go, yes, it's worthy or not worthy. And we'll put it into a big ice cream container here in the studio. And someone can stick their hand in and give it a good pull and see what comes out. And that person will do that four times.
Yep.
And then each one of those people will get one of these.
I've still got four the barrel from our OB.
Oh, yeah, you're the barrel chick, aren't you? Well, there you go. That's how we're going to do it.
So we're going to do one a week? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah, we could do them all at the same time.
I can do them all at the same time.
What would you like to do?
I can do one a week.
All right, one a week it is. We're making it up as we go along. That's Woo-hoo. Good. So next week, if you want to be in next week's draw, I'll have to change the thing on the website now.
Okay.
But if you want a next week's draw, we'll get an app in for the week. And you can enter as many times as you like.
Now, we had a gadget of the week a while back, which was my new Plantronics little Bluetooth headset. That made it to the gadget of the week.
I'm still getting over your wireless chippy thing, your SD card that you had.
That's really cool.
What are you using that? Are you...
It lives in my camera, yeah.
Ah.
So I was snapping photos before, and yeah, when I get home, I'll just switch the camera on. It'll put them in my photos folder.
Oh, great. That was a great gadget last week. I'm going to try and find one of those because it's a pain in the bottom having to actually go and take the card out of the camera or find the USB lead, plug it into the USB drive.
Exactly, yeah. And even though I had to pay a little bit above par for it to get it shipped over from overseas,
yeah.
I think it's really worth it because it just saves all that mucking about.
It's a great idea.
So, I'll tell you that.
Can't you get them here?
I couldn't find a local supplier. Look, if there's a local supplier out there for the iFi wireless SD cards, then yeah, let us know because I think there'd be a market for them. So, I ordered mine from overseas because that was the only place I could find.
Yeah, they look absolutely terrific. Yeah. All right, so yes,
my Plantronics headset, which was I was mentioning before, yeah, that I love it. It does really good noise cancelling. It sounds nice. Audio in both directions.
Well, if you have a gadget like that Graham's talking about, that was his gadget, he would have lodged it on this page. Not that you're going to win anything for a gadget, only apps. We want the apps. People who give us good apps come through. So
we're only giving prizes away for the apps.
Yep, for the apps.
Right. So if you have a really good application for the iPhone or for the Android phone or even for Windows Phone 7.
Or even a tablet-y thing.
Yep. Let us know about it.
Yeah.
And you might win a really cool Plantronics
M100 Bluetooth headset. Four to give away, one each week for 4 weeks.
These things are worth $130 each.
Correct. Yes, they are. Good thing. All right. Whilst we were talking briefly about things developing, which we have been during the course of the night, I got an email from Tim, Tim Scarf. Hello, Tim. Now, I won't say where he's from, but he drew my attention to this.
Parts unknown.
No, I know where he's from, but I'm not going to give him a... his PR company. They send you through all sorts of things. But I thought this was relevant. He said, I thought you might be interested in the third PayPal X Developer Challenge, which has opened today. Now, with the huge growth of Google's Android platform over the past year, it's created an exciting opportunity for developers. And PayPal, the cloud computing company known as PayPal... who stores your credit card details, is calling on Australian developers to submit their entries into the global competition, which is looking for developers to build innovative Android mobile apps that leverages PayPal's technology for mobile payments.
Has to link into PayPal somehow.
Absolutely. Now, there's three prizes. The grand prize is $25,000. That's good incentive for a young hack to get out there and write a bit of code up and get it onto the market. But I think this is also part of the let's get the free Android thing pumped, because they've got to compete with Apple. 100,000 apps or something, wasn't it now?
A lot.
Yes, don't quote me on that. But Steve did say it on that.
Yeah, I think it's more than that too.
By multiples of 10, perhaps.
Might have been something. I saw that somewhere. Maybe that was something else. But anyway, he had plenty of apps there now.
Didn't they hit a billion?
Could have been. No.
No, that's...
What hit a billion recently? Something didn't? Someone won
a $10,000? He wrote a check for $2 billion to all the developers. That's all the money that they've earned out of selling apps on the App Store. So if you think about his 30%, he did quite well out of it.
It's the number of post office boxes for every man, woman and child in Australia.
Is it?
Did you know we've got more mobile phones than we do people in Australia these days?
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah. It's good. What do we do with them all? How many people need two phone numbers? Well, I'm for one.
I want to know what my account number on my Australia Post bill is 24 digits long.
Hang on, let me think. How many?
If you divide 24 times 10 to the... Sorry, 10 to the power of 20...
Hang on, 23, because the last digit will be a check digit.
Right.
I did some numbers here.
Divide that by the number of people in Australia, which is only, 18 million or slightly more than 18 million. Are there really 55,500... trillion post office boxes for every man, woman and child in Australia?
I got 4.4 by 10 to the 15.
And you lost me.
Post office boxes.
Per Australian cent, yes.
Well, I noted this on my Twitter. I made note of this on my Twitter stream, I think.
Now, my theory is that the account number isn't just... that might allow for an individual number for each individual item of post in the entire history of Australia Post.
Probably. Well, I asked, was this absolutely necessary? And I received a reply to my Twitter account from Australia Post.
You're kidding,
Twitter
really?
Account.
And what did they say? Yes.
They said, maybe, smiley.
Well, at least they replied.
Did they know who you were? They must have done a bit of R&D before they...
I have no idea. But seriously, 24-digit account numbers. You're trying to key it in to do your BPay, or they don't even accept BPay, your post-bill pay thing. I mean, seriously. And they're not the only offender. They're like, you pay your gas accounts, and the phone accounts aren't too bad, but gas accounts are woeful as well.
Really? What's a good question? Do we really need all these digits?
Why do we need all these digits? It's just bizarre.
I don't know. Maybe they've taken a leaf out of the Microsoft key generator for their programs, because haven't they got 26 letters or something? Six groups of four or something, haven't they? 24?
Oh, with their activation codes.
Yeah. And they all blend into one when you sit there forever typing them in off the sticker. Why are you doing that, Graham?
No, I'm just thinking.
It is looking letters and numbers 0 through 9, 36 times 36 times 36
times
36 times 36.
Yeah, but I'm not going to get there, so I gave up.
It's a lot of combinations, isn't it?
See, and they haven't even ventured into the safe password world of using punctuation marks in uppercase and lowercase. It's all one case for the Microsoft.
I'll save that for the after Windows 7.
Yeah, exactly. So
haven't all those COA stickers got barcodes on them? So all you have to do is have a barcode reader attached to your keyboard.
How many people do you know have a barcode reader?
Yeah.
I
actually know a few.
I have three attached to my keyboard.
Yes. Mm. Well,
of course you do.
Very sensible. Mobile phones read barcodes now.
Yes.
You can snap. That'd be a good app. App for the week, a barcode reader. App.
Oh, I've had them for
There's
ages.
So many.
The business card reader apps are the really cool ones.
Actually, a business card reader that works.
Yes.
I've got a good one.
There's plenty of business card reader apps out there, but one that works would be really good.
Back onto apps, 350,000 according to the Apple website at the moment.
Oh, that sounds plausible.
Mm.
Oh, that's not 10 trillion billion, Lena. You were making that up as you went along.
I think there was a billionth download from the App Store.
Well, the number of sales, quite possibly. Yeah.
You're just spruiking on the chat saying that someone won.
Yeah, the person who won got a $10,000 iTunes card.
I remember that, and she thought it was a hoax call when she rang up, and they hung up on the Apple rep.
Yeah.
And they said, "You didn't believe me." And rightly so.
Because they called you. So you never trust it when they call you.
No, no. Are you having a lend to me? Which radio show is this? Is this Tech Talk Radio? Yeah, right. We should try that on some listeners. That'd be hilarious. Mm.
Dr. Curly Tech in our chat room says he's got PO Box account number 23 zeros and a 1. Well, he got the first one.
Is that like, that's like Woz's first ID card for Apple? He's got member number 1, hasn't he?
That's right. That's right.
I was reading, I was reading the book Icon, which is the one about Steve Jobs, as opposed to I Was, which is the one about Steve Wozniak. Well, apparently, I was reading a story in there that Mr. Jobs was very upset that Woz got number 1 and created a bit of a ruckus and ended up with number 0.
Mm. Being binary, of course.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you at the moment, just because you're bitching about ones and zeros and stuff like that. So,
Marky Mark in the chat room says his business card has a QR code on it. Very sensible, Marky Mark.
Very good. QR codes are very cool.
They are very cool. And how many people go, "What's that?" Because I was contemplating printing that in the back of the other.
That's one of those,
the other side of the card.
One of those square, two-dimensional shapes that you see. Yeah. Codes.
Did you know that you can put wireless network details in a QR code? There's an actual special code for them.
Mm. Really?
Yeah. So
you can click here to use our wireless network.
That's right. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it works really well too.
Well, we'll have to talk afterwards about that. I want to try that. That's good. Put that in the office for our visitors. Just QR code, and they'll look at you and go, "What's a QR code?"
That's where it's ideal, because you walk up with your Android device, for example, put it in the QR scan mode, just go bip, bip, and then you've automatically got access to the local Wi-Fi network.
Yep, it scans the QR code and says, "Would you like to connect to this network?"
Very clever.
Here comes a manic minute. Roslyn Cogan, do you remember him?
Yes, TVs. Cheap TVs.
Cheap TVs. He's put out a bit of a challenge, which I saw in the mainstream press today. I was going to say mess, but the press. Well, same thing, really.
Yes.
He's basically issued a $1 million challenge to JB Hi-Fi. That's the yellow shopping centre chain that's around the countryside.
He's made a bit of a bet.
Yeah. That underscores the dramatic forces shaping retail businesses at the moment. Mr. Cogan is offering to bet the electronics retailer $1 million. I wonder if that's... Sorry, I'm just thinking...
$1 million.
Yes, exactly. That's a point of reference to JD, Dr. Evil. How much? No, $1
million.
Anyway, he's basically... Where was I? Mr. Kogan's offering to bet the electronics retailer $1 million that by March 14, 2014, Apple will no longer sell its products through JB Hi-Fi stores, cutting away what he estimates is a third of all sales at the chain. Now, that's a pretty gutsy bet, isn't it?
No, actually, it's not, because Apple do wax and wane about outlet stores.
Wax and wane.
So they had Apple stores, and then they didn't, and they went into chains, and then they had Apple stores again, and then they didn't, and that's just another cycle. So they're in Harvey Norman's back in the 90s, and then they weren't, and then they are again. So, yeah, I reckon he's probably on the money there.
Really? Mm. Okay. So there we go, JD. You're going to put your $1 million up on the table?
If I had the million, it would be fantastic.
So that was, I read that, and I thought, Roslyn. Okay, a bit gutsy call there, but maybe not. Maybe he knows something.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
July, we might be hearing about the RE10 classification.
Oh, cool.
Hopefully. That would be exciting. Minister for Justice Brendan O'Connor says July will be the time for classification ministers to decide on an RE10 classification for computer games.
It will be time.
Hopefully.
The time is now.
Hopefully.
It's been time for several years now.
Yeah, I'm going to be cynical until it's actually happening, I think, because I've been burnt in the past. The federal election got in the way. The New South Wales state election got in the way. Ugh, something else is going to get in the way.
It's time is a very, well-worn...
Very political call to action, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
Yes, we can. But
you can tell the generation gap, can't we? I'm talking about it's time. and she just doesn't get me at all.
I do get it.
Okay, good.
I get it. I just think mine's better.
Which was the government? I don't know. I'm trying to Google it frantically. But
Whitlam government.
The GDC, the Game Developers Conference, was on in San Francisco this week. That was very exciting. Devs from all over the world came together to talk about making games workshops. They attended lectures and networked their little tushies off.
So networked their little tushies off.
That's right.
That's impressive.
Brenda Braithwaite did a spectacular rant that was my highlight of the GDC, talking about the negative rap that social games are getting, which you should all listen to if you're not adverse to the old swear word, because she gets quite passionate. she feels very strongly about her being maligned, and it's very good read. Good watch, sorry. The video, we might whack that up on the forum for you to have a look at. Some awards were given out at GDC. Best audio was to Red Dead Redemption. Best debut game was Minecraft. Best writing was Mass Effect 2. Best game design was Red Dead Redemption. Best downloadable game was Minecraft. Best visual art was Limbo. That was my game of the year last year. Best technology, Red Dead Redemption. Best handheld game, Cut the Rope. Now that's interesting because that's an iOS game and it got best handheld game, which means it beat the PlayStation Portable, the DS.
That's big.
A big deal for that to happen. I think it might be the first time that's happened. The Innovation Award went to Minecraft and the Game of the Year, Red Dead Redemption. And Mortal Kombat will be resubmitted to the classification board unedited.
Unedited?
Yep. They're not going to change a thing. They're just going to they're going to appeal and resubmit.
Oh, okay. Is that what you do?
So give us an R18 plus, suckers.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I've got a full quote, but have we got time for me to quickly read it off? From the press release from Warner Brothers?
Because otherwise we're going to eat into your
After careful consideration, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment Australia have decided to appeal to the Australian Classification Review Board against the refused classification decision given to Mortal Kombat. After reviewing both the gameplay and the board's original decision, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment Australia believe the violence in the game is on par with numerous other titles readily available on the Australian market. As such, the company wants to exhaust all options to make the game available to Mortal Kombat fans in this country. An identical version of the game will be submitted for appeal.
Yeah, well, the board can't give it an R18 plus classification because that's not available to them.
Exactly. Yes.
No, so what's going to happen if they win is they're going to get it rated MA15 plus, which is completely inappropriate.
Yep, and now the spotlight's on them with the R18 stuff, so it might not get through. It might not.
It might not. Let's talk about this briefly, shall we? Music apps. There's a new music app which offers personal offline music radio to your device. How about that? So you can actually get how at the moment you have to stream your music.
Yeah, so this must download stuff to your phone.
Which is going to download it. This is a new music service allows music fans to listen to personalised radio on their mobiles even when they're not online. Music service WE7 is launching a free app that will let users create a personalised radio station on their mobile phones. How do you reckon that's going to work?
Yes. How is this different to a playlist in iTunes or any of those others?
Well, you're offline.
Probably all wrapped up in DRM, and you've probably got a load of special apps that will only work on the iPhone and it won't work on anything else. I imagine that's how it's going to work. I haven't looked at it, but that would be my guess.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see, won't we, on that one? But it's bandwidth. Consumer, obviously download it, play it, DRM, as you say, Graham, and away you go. While users are listening to the WE7 app in a connected area on their phone, the app will allow the phones to store songs, which it can then continue playing even when the phone number no longer has internet access. It's a bit like a big cache then, maybe.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, we'll see what happens. Do you think there's... I don't know, how are they going to do that? Because we've got all these new music services coming out that everyone's sort of pushing and stuff like that. Do you reckon that's going to be big on bandwidth? It'll kill your mobile net or your
I think that's the point, though. It'll download it while it's on your Wi-Fi at home and then be able to stream without having to stream over your mobile connection.
Yeah,
you reckon? I think that would be the point.
So all your programs are there ready to go. Doesn't matter where you are or when you are, they're all on your device.
Oh, anyway.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOSS as well?
Steve Wozniak, there was
the traitor. I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click it, upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic, all right.
That's why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
This week's gadget is the Amazon Kindle eBook Reader. We mentioned this earlier on at the start of the show.
Oh, is that what you said? Don't steal my thunder.
And I thought that I would just give you a very quick rundown of models and prices because the prices have dropped.
Yeah, and that's why we're seeing more and more around these days. It starts off, we've got a Kindle Wi-Fi 6-inch version. We've never had the Kindle as a gadget. I look back for all my notes.
Have we?
Never had it as a gadget.
Oh, okay.
So it's about damn time, I say. $139 I found it for online.
Wow, that's cheap, isn't it?
It's cheap. If you pay for just the normal standard shipping and from either locally from the States, $139. You can get a Kindle 3G, which comes with what they call free 3G and Wi-Fi. And that's a 6-inch screen. That's available for around about $189. So you can plug a SIM card into it in order to connect to Amazon.com or wherever and download your ebooks.
Yep. I think it probably comes with the SIM card already in, and they've already got an agreement with a carrier. It's a bit transparent.
I think that's how it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it comes with that 3G connection already there, and they've got an agreement with the carrier for the Kindle to have access.
That's why it's called free 3G, because it's unmetered.
Yeah.
Is that only in the States, or they do it here as well?
I believe they do it here. You'd probably have to buy one for the market that you're going to use it in, though.
Someone who's got one that uses free 3G in Australia, tell us. Feedback at texthookradio.com.au. We want to hear from you. The third model, Andrew, is the Kindle DX, which offers free 3G, a 9.7-inch screen.
It's bigger.
So half as big again. It's white, which looks nice, and second generation.
Is that what you saw on the train, or were they little ones?
They were little ones. Saw little ones on the train. The Kindle DXs are available for about $329, so still cheaper than the first generation iPad.
Only just.
Only just.
Yeah. Only just, but right. Yeah. So there you go. Large displays. You can read in sunlight with no glare. They're slim. You can download the books.
Yeah, don't confuse them with iPads though. Kindles and iPads do very different jobs. They're not aiming at the same job. They're not the same machine. They're not interchangeable.
Have a look at Amazon.com for more information. It's a gadget, Andrew, the Amazon Kindle ebook reader.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
A colleague referred me to this website during the week. Wix.com. Wix.com. Create free flash websites. If you think that's the sort of thing that you might need to do, you can make your own stunning websites, widgets, layouts, and more for free. There are FAQs, video tutorials, there's the Wix forum, and a direct line to the Wix support team. They've got a clever drag and drop editor, so you can edit galleries, frames, menu buttons, music, video files, without entering a single line of code. You can also upgrade to a premium account for Wix to host your domain for you, remove the ads, get extra storage, access Google Analytics, and more.
Fantastic.
It's a good little site, so have a look if you're interested in creating quick, fast, free flash websites.
Say that again, quickly.
Quick, fast, free flash websites.
Okay, yeah, good.
Is that what I said?
Yeah, that's what you said.
www.wix.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Now, here we go, App of the Week. Don't forget, go and tell us your favourite app, and you might win a little toy that we have, one of these earpiece things. Do you remember what they're called, the Chrome?
The Plantronics M100, I think it was.
That's right.
So tell us your app.
Bluetooth headset, yeah.
Here's my contribution for this week. This is an app that I use on my iPad and my iPhone when I used to have an iPhone. I've since parted with my iPhone. It's gone to sort of other places now. But the app that I have is an app called Quota. Now, Quota, which you can find on the App Store, and you can also find on our website. It'll be in the show notes. It'll be also on our download section. You can go there. We've built new pages for all these sort of things so you can find them. This is a mob, and they develop an app called, as I say, search for Quota in the App Store, and it lets you put all the things, absolutely everything you use, from your phone company through to your tolling system on the freeway, through to your internet usage, your Twitter account, the weather, your Qantas frequent flyers, the CityLink, you can see all the traffic, absolutely everything you can possibly think of.
So anything where you need to monitor your usage.
Correct. And it sits in one smart application, which means you can sit there and you go, oh, I better check how my phone's going, and you can see who's gone over budget on their cap, and you can see who's using too much peer-to-peer on the internet, and you can check out the weather all in one foul swoop. Now, this is a really handy app. It works for both the iPhone and for the thingy-bob that I have here, iPad.
Version 1 iPad.
Version 1 iPad. Probably work on version 2 as well, I suspect. So, but anyway, that's my app of the week, and now I'm going to hand over to Lena because she had her app of the week too, which I thought this was really cool.
Two apps for the podcast.
Bonus special this week. That's why I said we had to keep on moving, but this one I thought was a doozy because I loaded it up on my little iPad-y thing here.
You did. Take it away, Leans.
Flipboard. I'm looking forward to getting an iPad 2, and this will be the first app I get for it because I think it's so cool. It's a lot like we were talking about Paperly last week, making your own newspaper out of all the things on your Twitter feed, where you can choose all your websites that you'd like to listen to regularly and pop them all onto Flipboard, and it displays them, each article, in a magazine format. So you can flick through your morning paper, reading from The Age, Sydney Morning Herald, doing, you know, from whatever site you want, Kotaku for gamers, and all sorts of, wherever you get your tech news from or anything like that, you can put it all, you can even do Facebook and Twitter on there as well. Put all your information onto one magazine on your iPad and flick through it when you have your coffee in the morning. Very cool.
Mm. I've had a look. You can put Twitter feeds in, as you were sort of saying.
Yep.
And every time you come to it, it's different.
It is.
It's really cool. You can keep up to date with, like, you can put Dr. Ron and Lena and Jay, anyone, all your favourite Twitter feeds in there, and just come and see what they're up to in the next morning. Even Facebook goes into it,
yep,
too.
Yeah, it does.
That's scary. I saw some videos that I posted on the weekend when I loaded it up. So, App Store, and that's just the iPad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just iPad, not iPhone.
So we'll try and alternate. We'll try and mix them up. So we had an Android app last week, and this week we've got Apple apps.
Yeah.
Who knows what we'll have next week? Maybe a Microsoft app.
Because we've got Microsoft in.
Yeah, Brian can volunteer a Phone 7 app he likes.
Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe Dave can.
Are we doing desktop ones as well, or just handhelds?
At this stage, I think it's handhelds, isn't it?
Fair enough.
Well, you've got a game you want to put on there, have you?
No, I've got... Well, there's an app store on desktop Mac.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go. That was the Tech Talk Radio app of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Boss. James Boss.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Workers at a Ukrainian aquarium didn't believe it when a visitor told them a crocodile had swallowed a telephone, but then the reptile started ringing. The visitor was trying to snap a picture of a 14-year-old Gina the crocodile, when she dropped her Nokia. Gina has since been refusing food, so it's a bit of a morose odd spot. And sadly,
doesn't agree with her. What type of device was it?
We don't know. No one knows. There's much speculation.
It was a Nokia something.
Was it?
Now the lady by the name of
that upset anyone's stomach. I would have thought.
The lady by the name of Rima Golovko. She stretched out her arm trying to snap the photo, and Gina opened his mouth, and the phone slipped in. Employees were initially sceptical, but said Miss Golovko, the phone started ringing, and the sound was coming from inside of Gina's stomach. A veterinarian said the crocodile will be taken for an X-ray next week if he continues to refuse food, and that surgery would be considered only as a last resort. Ms. Golovko said she didn't care much about getting the telephone back anymore, but would like to retrieve her SIM card, which holds precious photos and contacts.
How are you going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to stick your arm down there and do
that? Well, there's two ways it can come out. One is surgically, and the other is naturally, I suppose.
Is there such a thing as a... I don't know, laxative is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Something that makes a crocodile give it back.
They're trying to encourage the phone out naturally.
Are they?
Yes.
Or good someone life. Else could be wandering through what's left
didn't
after a crocodile
acids
passes.
Didn't it have in its stomach to deal with digesting bones and things? You think the phone wouldn't stand a chance.
Well, if it's still ringing, then it's doing all right.
Wouldn't it? I think the animal would be poisoned through all sorts of awful things.
It starts digesting.
I don't think I'd want my phone back.
No,
the owner doesn't.
No.
She wants a SIM card back if that's at all possible. Maybe just a SIM card will come out the other end. Who knows?
Maybe.
That's the odd spot, Andrew. Pull us out of this dive.
That is the show that is Tech Talk Radio for this show this week. I can't remember what number it is. It's been one of those weeks. Anyway, come back. We'll do the same thing again, same time next week. Until then.
Number 10, that was.
Was it? That means number 11 next week.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Legs 11. Next week,
won't you?
No.
Oh, you're going to miss Microsoft, but that's probably a good thing.
Oh, I'm not a hater.
Jodie, is this your cameo role for the year?
I think I'll be back.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, all right, well, this will be good. So next week, Dave Glover in from Microsoft to talk about Phone 7. Until then, same time next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Lena VanDeventer. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner, and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.